Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Alves, and joining me in the dugout from a safe distance, my pal Brian Svensson.
Hey, I've got power this week.
All right, he is back on. And the man who generates his own power in the bullpen, he's loud enough for all of us, my pal Chris Zook.
I'm feeling the power tonight.
Oh my goodness. All right, relax.
See, this is what you missed, Brian, last week. We missed you. But you know what? I try to make up. I was trying to do the energy of two people last week there with Mike also.
I'm sure that was a lot of fun for Mike.
Chris makes up for he does the volume of two people, if not the energy.
Yeah.
A little bit of both there, but we're happy to have you back, Brian.
I'm happy to be back.
And we got lots to talk about tonight.
There's so much to talk about. I mean, do we want to start with the Carlos Rodon game, or where do
you
we
know
want
what?
To start?
Can I interject? Because sure. I'm going to hijack it for a second, and I just want to say it's Jackie Robinson Day. It is actually.
Well, we are recording this on Thursday.
No. It actually is Thursday and Friday. It's officially on.
Oh,
Thursday.
So this is like Earth Day, where it's like three days this year.
Okay. That is correct, because I believe not every team is playing today. When we're taping it, it's Thursday night, but officially it's on April 15th. But they have extended it to Friday, so it is Jackie Robinson Day Part Two. So. It's always, you know what,
you know, if anyone deserves 2 days, I mean,
well, sure.
Important player in the history of the game, of course he does.
Yeah, and you know, and next year will be huge because it'll be the 75th anniversary. And just kind of, you know what, I always get it's just such amazing about it. I mean, we always rail on Bud Selig about his tenure as the commissioner, but there's one thing he got right was to evoke this day, because
they go far enough. I mean, they celebrate Jackie the ball player, but they hardly ever celebrate Jackie the person as well.
You know what? Okay, I'll give you, you know, again, of course, you know, there's always some good with some bad here, but let me go with the good for a second here. What I read about this year, which is great, we talked about this earlier in the offseason about the Players Alliance. I believe it's about 100 athletes. A lot of it was African-Americans who are either present or past. And what I read is they were donating their salaries of these games to the Players Alliance to kind of keep that going, the momentum of that. And there's quite a few things they were doing around this weekend the last 2 days. So yeah, I get you, Brian, is that they could always do more. Yep. But I will say the one thing which is phenomenal is to just watch these games over the next 2 days and every year that it comes up is to have everyone wear 42. And if people don't know what's going on, it always brings up Jackie, it stimulates a conversation. So that alone, I think, is well worth it. I would agree with you, Brian, that they could probably maybe keep pushing, and maybe they'll do a bigger next year as it's the 75th anniversary. But yeah, I just think it's one of those days that I always look forward to for Major League Baseball.
Yeah. And, you know, it's something that we all need to do more. You know, we all sit here and we celebrate, and it's important. He is, as I mentioned, the most important player in the history of Major League Baseball. And I stand by that and will continue to stand by that. You know, we need to, as a people though, look at all the causes he stood for and championed, and continue to push those, especially in times of such, in times of such racial turmoil. You know, we need to look at the barriers he broke and understand that there are more barriers to break still.
Well, yeah, there's still like systemic issues that
and the game, I was watching a telecast today about this, is that, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, they were saying about 20-25% of Major League Baseball were made up of African Americans, and now it's down to about 7%.
It's been going down pretty steadily since about
6 or 7. And so one of the legacies I'm sure Jackie would love is to have more African Americans, not only on the field but off the field, right? To be more involved in this game at mm-hmm. every level, right? And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's what the Players Alliance is about. And I think, you know, these are causes and celebrations that need to be not just a celebration. I would agree is that they need to build that with actions behind it too, right? So, but yeah, I just wanted to, I hijacked that a bit. There's a lot to talk about, but I just thought let's celebrate Jackie and Jackie Robinson Day today and yesterday.
For sure. I hadn't realized that it was extending over 2 days. So I was going to
tip our cap
at the end of the episode, but the fact that we record on the Thursday. So do we want to talk Carlos Rodon and his no-hitter now?
Yeah.
Actually, we have two no-hitters to talk about, because when we taped, there was another one that was on fire. That's true, yeah.
Musgrove.
Okay, so this is Musgrove had the first one in Padres history. I mean, it's a long-standing franchise, so that is quite something. And it's interesting because he grew up as a Padre fan.
1969 was when that franchise started. So it was something like 8,000. I mean, I don't know if you remember when the Mets, I believe it was Johan Santana got there first. And someone had a website like New York Mets no hitter or whatever, and there was a countdown. They finally had to stop it because they actually reached it. But yeah, Musgrave. Yeah, talk about Joe Musgrave's story, because it's fantastic.
Musgrove, first of all.
Musgroves. There you go. See, I could get the I knew I was gonna screw that up.
It was someone's name, so we could have taken
it. Well, of course. I mean, that's just on par.
Yeah, so the Musgrove one, I mean, what I thought was interesting was he had grown up in the San Diego area and was a fan of that team when he was younger. I think he'd been there for one where one of the no-hitters kind of got broken up. Like, because, of course, over that long history, they've had a few where they've come close, but...
Yeah, they had a couple that were into the 80s or into the 90s. What I read a bit is that his parents have season tickets, or they had season tickets when he was younger, and he wears number 44 in honor of Jake Peavy.
Yes, that's correct.
Which is pretty good. If you don't remember, he was pretty electric there back in the day. There, I mean, he didn't have a long career, but he had a very, you know, a good.
I think the Jake Peavy trade tree is one of those ones that like is just you're just blown away by all the people that are involved in it.
Oh yeah.
I'll have to look it up and see if I can find it. But yeah, the Jake Peavy trade tree is, I think that the reason why they have Tatis is because of trade.
Oh, are you kidding?
I think so.
It goes all the way. Oh, see, that's fascinating, right? Because that's how the tree branch. Jake Peavy is responsible for Tatis. That would be fantastic.
So it was 8,206 regular season games.
That's crazy.
For the Padres. They were the only team in the majors to never record a no-hitter up until that point. He allowed only one base runner, and it was a hit by pitch in the fourth.
Yeah. So the interesting thing also is what I read is that the manager was saying that the, you know, especially nowadays, you know, no one does a complete game, right? It's very rare in these times. But you know, he was actually, his pitch count was low, and he was rolling. And then Musgrove was saying that he wasn't going to be taken out anyways, right? So I mean, it's one of those when you get close, right? You're going to go until your arm falls off or you give up a hit.
Yeah, he started the ninth with 103 pitches, and apparently, you know, of course, managers, when you're in the triple digits.
Oh.
But Musgrove said he was hell-bent on continuing to pitch. He quoted as saying, "I had no intentions of coming out of that game." It only took him 9 more pitches, though, to do it. So,
yeah, I was excited here. So, I've got a question before we get to Carlos and his no-hitter, almost perfect game.
They were both almost perfect games, right?
Yeah.
Peavy's only base runner was hitting Joey Gallo.
That's right. Yeah.
So both guys lost a no hitter on a hit by pitch.
So here's the thing, Brian. We bit the bullet. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. My brother bought MLB TV. And so I've gone halfers with them and stuff. So I've just,
it's well worth it, isn't it?
It's pretty good. Now here's my question. Do they do no hitter alerts by any chance?
No. Not if you're watching on the television. Okay. There are, if you're watching on your computer on Google Chrome, I can send you a link to a whole bunch of different add-ons.
Okay. So, cause you know, I didn't want to get too much in the weeds, but I just thought that would be just a great thing to have
there's, you know, a lot of things that they could do, but okay, won't, because okay, they're okay. So there's bad some at their jobs.
Sure. There's some limitations. Okay. I'll still watch, you know, the games, which is fantastic. Okay. So Michael, you can, let's talk about the second one. Let's talk about the second no hitter.
Obviously that was, the most recent one. And okay. So, it actually did beg the question, because we've kind of entered the three true outcome era, right? Like it's, you know, home run, strikeout, walk, right? Like that's pretty much all batters are trained to do, right?
Right.
Are we going to see more no hitters? I don't think we're going to see perfect games, but are we going to see more no hitters?
I think we talked about this maybe 2 years ago on the show. Yeah. And I think we said at the time,
back around on this? Like,
I think we said, yeah, probably, right?
You know, it's interesting. So when you're looking this up a bit and gather some of the information, there's been, the way they count it is 308 no hitters up to date as of now. And I think 14 were combined and the rest were solo, right? So the interesting thing is, I think the only provision about, yes, I get where you're going with this, but you know, people are going to strike out and there's more chances for this because the ball's not in play, except would be about the managers. And are they going to limit?
And this, I guess this is what balances out, is like, right, getting pulled earlier or like
you could
being
get a
on
combined
such pitch
no hitter. You could get a combined no hitter, but those are harder because I think why there's so many solo ones. Well, one, the game was different, you know, for a majority of Major League Baseball, they weren't really on pitch counts as they are now. But it's just, you know, the starting pitcher is rolling and you know he's got it going, and that's how they get a no hitter because they're dominant that day, and they just keep that dominance going. But I think it's gonna be. I mean, I'd be curious about what the average usually is. Does anyone sort of remember when we talked about this a couple of years ago? Because I feel like it's between 3 and 5 sometimes, like depending on the years, right? There are some years you can get more, but kind of the average mean. Would that be sort of right?
I think I remember seeing something. I'm going to look it up right now. So I guess vamp.
There's
been
vamp
more
by saying
no hitters recently.
One quick thing, I forgot about the Musgrove one, the catcher.
Oh, right.
Victor Caratini was the catcher for Musgrove in this one.
Yes.
He was behind the plate for Alec Mills' no hitter last fall for the Cubs.
The last one.
And that was he's the first catcher to oversee consecutive no hitters.
crazy. That's a crazy. See, the best thing about baseball is that stat alone, right? That can only happen in baseball, right? Like how? Oh, because not only that, but he was with two different teams.
Yeah,
right?
Caratini was with the Cubs before. He signs with the Padres. Musgrove came over to the Padres.
That's right.
In the offseason. So both of these guys were not on this team.
See, that was the magic. You needed people to come from somewhere else.
Since 1876, the average is about two per year, roughly about 2.09. However, if you look at a shorter period, so beginning with 1962, which is the post-expansion, the average is about 2.8. So almost three per season. So yes, more no-nos since expansion than pre-expansion.
So the interesting thing would be, I don't know if the, that makes some sense, right? I mean, there's more teams, one, right? So that's one thing. They had expansion about that. But two is, yeah, there's more opportunity for that. I think, so we're already at two, and we're only in a two and a half weeks
into the season. Yeah, so
I would think we're going to hit the...
We're going to have three.
I'll make a good prediction. I'll say we'll have five this year. How about that?
Whoa,
that is bold.
That is bold.
Well, I mean, just think about it for a second. We got two after 2 weeks, right? So I've got 5.5 months to get three more no hitters. I think that can happen, because I think I'd go back to where Michael's point to start this was that you're gonna, you're just having people either hitting for home runs or whiffing, and there might be more opportunities, right? So I mean, you already got two. Well, the Padres never had one, and Chicago, right? I mean, Carlos Rodon.
Yeah, but past successes does not indicate future.
I totally get that. But I mean, I think that's the beauty of a no hitter, right? It can come out of nowhere. And there are some pitchers who Roger Clemens never had a no hitter, right? Well,
you know what the next no hitter is going to be? It's going to be Jacob DeGrom, and he's going to lose the game.
Right. You know, I feel that that's a shot to my heart there, because I have DeGrom in fantasy, and you know, it's I mean, he gets you. I mean, a head to head.
I have Musgrove in one of my leagues.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
I did see a great tweet recently that, you know, Jacob DeGrom is such an outstanding pitcher that when he pitches, he shuts down the offense on both teams.
That's funny.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's a tough one. So Rodon.
Go ahead.
I guess we should talk about him. So, yes. I mean, this is a guy who 2 years ago had elbow surgery. He had shoulder issues last year. And to start this season, he actually was re-signed by the White Sox 2 weeks before spring training started, because they'd non-tendered him after last off season.
Yeah.
I just want to like point that out before we even talk about his performance, because like what a path that guy's been on.
Well, not only that, I believe what I read is that he was down to like 91 miles an hour on his pitching, loss of velocity, and then somehow built back. I mean, again, this is, you know, the beauty of baseball is that's a redemption story that he battled his way back. He was a big prospect at the time, and you know, a bit of lightning in the bottle there, and not only does he get a no-hitter, but he certainly came pretty close to a perfect game.
Yeah, so it was the ninth inning when he hit Cleveland catcher Roberto Perez on the foot.
Did
with
you put
a breaking
"hit" in
ball.
In the quotes a little bit there? Just wondering about that one. Have you
I didn't.
Seen the highlight of that? Have you seen the highlight of that?
So, I mean, this is the thing. Like, he didn't try to get out of the way.
Didn't get out of the way. But it did hit him.
But
the pitch is off the plate. It's not
like the Conforto one from
No, it's not the Conforto.
And
we talked about that last season.
Like, oh my goodness.
No, this isn't a situation where like Perez was like putting his foot like
that's right. He does
on the plate or something. Like he's in the box. He got hit.
That's right. I mean, it that said is, you know, I read the quote after Perez said he knew he had a no-hitter, didn't know he had a perfect game, but he said, you know, I just stood in there in the box and got hit, right? So, I mean, there's not, it's a baseball play. It kind of sucks a bit that it ruins the perfect game, but good on him that he follows up and he finishes the no-hitter, right? A lot of times, you know, when a perfect game goes the no-hitter too, right? Because a pitcher is so focused on a perfect game that, it happens a lot that they lose focus or, you know, whatever, the rhythm is gone, and then they might not get the no-hitter. So, I mean, fantastic that he kept it, the last two outs there, and he got it.
Yeah, and that was right after the first batter of the ninth almost got to base. Jose Abreu, slow bouncer from Josh Naylor to Abreu, and he had to slide into the bag to barely beat diving Naylor. Right call at the bag to call him out, but of course that, you know, made it a little dicier, and I have to imagine, you know, maybe shook Rodon up a little there, and then you get that breaking ball that gets away from him,
and yet he finished it off.
He managed. So after hitting Perez, he struck out Yu Chang and got ground Jordan Luplow to ground to Yoan Makata at third to make the outs. So that makes him the fourth, it would have made him the fourth White Sox to have a perfecto. Oh, wow. So Philip Humber, Mark Burley, and Charlie Robertson in White Sox history have had perfectos, but it's the 20th no-hitter in franchise history. Last August, Lucas Giolito was the most recent against the Pirates.
That's correct. I will just I throw this out to both of you as well. I have never seen a no hitter in my life in person. I have seen a one hitter. Hideki Nomo had a one hitter in Milwaukee.
Hideo.
Sorry. But yeah, it's funny when you know what's happening. Like he had like, I think it was like five or six before he got the first hit there, right? You can hear the buzz in the crowd and stuff like that. I would love to see it once. I mean, it would be unbelievable, obviously, right? There's only been 300 some ever in the history, but yeah, I mean, that's just fantastic if whoever was in the park to see these.
So as good as Rodon and Musgrove's performances were, we do have to tip our cap to earlier this week, the North Texas pitcher Hope Troutman, who is in the NCAA Division I and recorded the first ever perfect game, and by which we mean she struck out every batter.
Yeah, all of them.
Seven innings, zero hits, zero walks, 21 strikeouts. So it's a seven inning game in that league, and every batter
boring game in the field
struck out. What a phenomenal performance!
It's perfect perfecto. Like I don't know if there's a name for that because I don't think it's ever happened.
It's not quite an immaculate game because she didn't throw all strikes.
Okay. But, yes, you win. Now we're slicing it.
I'm trying to say that you can't call it my first thought would have been an immaculate game, but I don't think works because
I think it's something like a perfect, you know, I don't, whatever. That's still whatever crazy. It's unbelievable. What I read about that, they don't think anyone's ever done that before. In any league. Just think about if you're the other team there, you're just like, okay,
article. The article that I sent out, Matt Monahan for MLB.com wrote it. There have been other 21 strikeout games before, but it's not been like that's to get the out, like that's included hits and walks as well, right? Like that. They've recorded 21 outs in a seven inning game, but this is the first where that's the only thing that happened.
Right.
And in an article, I thought it was great. There's somewhere in there was a little bit of a blurb, just like, if they would have known that she was going to be this perfect, that they could have done the Satchel Paige deal.
Get the outfielders having to sit down. Yeah.
Right. Right. Cause literally you're just watching someone pitch that day. Cause you're not going to do anything in the field.
No, exactly. I mean, and I think when we did our rewatch, when we read the Josh Gibson movie, didn't he? They had that scene where Satchel Paige, Delroy Lindo as Satchel Paige, got the.
Yeah, they did. They did. They did.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I was just wondering, because Brian alluded to, and we talked at the end of the last week's broadcast about the Conferto umpire, but there was another one that was this on the weekend as well with Atlanta and Philadelphia.
I didn't see this. There was another one?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. So there was a play at the plate.
He didn't even touch the base.
I mean, it's not only that they actually was, it was Atlanta had called for a replay on it. He does not touch the base at all. It's not even close. Somehow the call on the field is safe and they don't reverse the call. And coupled with what happened with the Mets game where Conferto just steps into the box and gets, you know, he gets hit. So they don't even review that one because it's not reviewable. It goes back to, if we're going to do this, let's just review everything. I don't understand this. Just why can't we do this quickly and just have someone in York or wherever they're doing this, just look at this up real quick, yes or no, and then let's get going here.
Well, because I've very long been anti-replay. I don't think we need it, man. I don't think we need it.
Well, I mean, we don't need it if they don't use it correctly.
It's anti-fun, right? Like, if they're going to make the errors anyways, right? And we're seeing this a lot in European football over there, especially over in England, is that like they're going to get the calls. Yeah, they're going to get the calls wrong anyways, right?
I know where you're going with this because I was talking to someone earlier this week. In soccer, it's a bit, okay. Yeah, I know where you're going with that, Brian. I would agree in soccer, it's insane because they're literally, it's like millimeters and stuff like that on the offsides or something like that.
Yeah, and they're not even considering error rate. But I mean, it's the same thing with thing with baseball, right? They're not getting the calls right. And they can't review certain things. Yeah, and like,
and that's what I'm saying is that, but
it's just there's no point. There's no point. Well, and it's driving
the
me.
The point would be if you get it right. Right. The point is if there's a play
right,
like
but
that,
like, you got to sit through a 4-minute freaking.
No, but that's what it shouldn't be. Right. It shouldn't be like that because it should be like something like tennis has a very good system. They show a replay real quickly. It's almost instantaneous.
Well, that's because the call is made all by technology. There's no human error in that. It's all TrackMan stuff.
No,
right?
There is human error. It's called in or out by a lines person still. They still do have a human person.
Well, the replay isn't done by humans. It's all tech.
Yeah, yeah,
it's the Skyhawk stuff, right?
The tech would be that you have 16 different camera angles now. You can slow it down.
The tennis one isn't somebody in a booth or even the linesman who got the call wrong looking at it. It's literally like, it is the technology that says the ball landed here, therefore it's in. So it's
I still think, you know, if somehow, I don't know. I don't think you can put the genie back in the bottle now. That's where I would go with that. I know, Brian, you're right. We had it forever without instant replay and you lived with it good or bad. You still have it, especially with umpire calls, right? Until they get to robot umpires or whatever, but it just kind of brings it up. I think when it's so egregious, at least on those two cases, that they totally missed it and blew it. And if you don't use the system right, then you would go to sort of where your comment is and why you even use it. Yeah.
There's no point. Like, I just don't agree with it at all. It's anti-fun. You know, they get the calls wrong. They get the calls wrong anyways. Even if they get the calls right, Zook, It still sucks. It doesn't. There's no enjoyment because you got it. You don't know when you can celebrate. You don't know when you can celebrate. You don't know when it actually is real. You don't
have this, but we've had this for years now, right? This isn't like,
and it still sucked when we first had it, and it still sucks now. When it's when a manager challenges something, or when something gets reviewed, and the umpires has to amble over to the headset and then get the headset on, and then somebody, you know, and it's like a 5 minute delay. Rob Manfred specifically got rid of more pitching changes because people don't want to sit through that kind of stuff. It doesn't add any enjoyment. It doesn't get the calls right. And even if they got the calls quote unquote right, it probably wouldn't change enough calls over the course of a season to mitigate the unfunness of having to sit there and not watch baseball. It sucks, Zook. I don't care what you're gonna say. It sucks, and I hate it. Okay, and they really shouldn't be having it anymore.
Oh, okay. That it's not gonna happen anytime soon. I'm telling you right now.
I get it. And you're gonna be smug about it, and that's fine. But it's still that doesn't stop the fact.
But I'm just saying
that doesn't stop the fact that it sucks a lot. Right,
but if you lose on a bad call that could be,
you know,
changed,
what it happens. It. Happens.
Guess what?
And I said that before, and I say that now. Human error exists, and you know what? It's being an ump is one of the hardest jobs in sports, and I don't care if they occasionally, which is what happens most of the time, with the exception of a few umps like Joe West or Angel Hernandez.
No, don't go after Joe West. He just won a big lawsuit. So,
okay, well, he still sucks at his job. So like other than a select few umpires, you know, these guys are ridiculously good at the hardest job in sports. And, you know, occasionally they're going to get one wrong, and that's fine. And I would rather sit through one of them getting it occasionally wrong every now and then, than having to sit through an instant replay for 5+ minutes every game.
Okay, Brian, I got you. You've said this over. I got it. I'm just saying is it's not going to change soon. But here's the other thing. If they can get the system that isn't 5 minutes, that is more like 50 seconds.
But it won't ever get there.
Well,
this is my turn to tell you it's not ever going to happen.
Right. Well, then that's where we're at with Major League Baseball right now. And we'll continue to keep talking about these things when they come up, unfortunately, then.
This is true. We are running out of time. Before we go, though, I do want to tip my cap to Aaron Hicks. This week, following the murder of Dante Wright, he did sit out the game between the Blue Jays and the Yankees that night. Hicks was drafted by the Twins. He played the first few years of his career in Minnesota and felt a strong attachment to that, and also to the Black Lives Matter movement. And so I just want to tip my cap to someone who, you know, made what he felt was an appropriate response in the wake of that shooting. And just wanted to recognize him, because this is something that sometimes gets glossed over or maybe forgotten, but something that I appreciated seeing.
I totally agree with that. And I would say good on the Yankees for, you know what I mean? Like supportive of that. And, you know, that, he felt very strongly about that. That's his convictions of that. And he wanted to make that statement. And yeah, I mean, you know, very tragic. And I think you're right about that, Michael, to bring that up.
I think with that, we should wrap up.
Hold on one second. Right.
Oh, you got to ask your question, do you?
I got to ask, because we didn't get this from Brian last week, and we pumped it up anyways. What's on the pity party this week?
I haven't done anything special for it, but it should be a good episode. I've got some good music coming across. I'm going to play some stuff from a really awesome garage pop punk band out of Calgary.
What's the name?
Misha and the Spanx. They're a duo.
Yeah. The new singles.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Mixed Blood Girls is the track. And it's really awesome. Definitely worth checking out. Misha is an incredibly talented musician, and she's starting to get a little bit more outspoken on Indigenous matters in Canada. So that's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Good stuff. Well, can't wait for it.
We will wrap it up here on the Bench Jockeys. We'll be back next Friday, and I will link to the perfecto piece in our
the perfect perfecto is what I'm going
perfecto
with. Yeah, all something right. Like that. Why not?
Double P.
Hey, something like that. And guess what? They're gonna play ball.
Oh my goodness!
Strike three. You're out.